Join the Corruption Busters team on Mondays at 12 p.m. for the best in crime-fighting radio. You heard it here first.
It's just past the midday mark on this, the second week of January, and welcome to the very first live show of Corruption Busters for 2018. So much has happened since our last show that I don't actually know where to start. So let me tell you what's coming up in the show. Late in the show, we'll be chatting to Roelof Weideman. He is one of the complainants in the Alexio saga, and we'll be telling you a lot more about what the Alexio saga entails and where we are with that fraud investigation. Before we chat to you, to Roelof, we're going to be chatting to well-known Durban investigator Brad Nathanson regarding the horrific murder of CM Lee. It's made headlines around the country and, in fact, around the world due to the severity and the cruelty of the act. So we'll be chatting directly to the investigator involved. On the local front, as you're all aware, the H&M shops were basically destroyed by angry EFF supporters claiming that H&M are racist as a result of the depiction of a monkey, a child outfit saying a monkey in the jungle, something to that effect. What they don't seem to realize, the EFF, at this point in time, is that H&M is an international brand. It has absolutely nothing to do with the South Africans' shops that they ransacked. And those people are just there to do their job. You would think that EFF, being a party and now being a mature party, considering the fact that they've been growing in numbers, that they would choose their fights more carefully. Going and ransacking shops and take away jobs from local South Africans as a result of an international error on the part of the H&M group does not justify the actions of the EFF. And to me, it just stinks of looking for the popular vote. I didn't see them ransacking the Gupta compound in Sachsenwald. I suppose it's an easy target to walk into a shopping center and ransack a shop and intimidate innocent shopgoers as well as the poor staff that work there. With Zuma in the news again, now that we have a new president and talk of an early recall, he seems to have put that rumor to rest. He's going to be giving the State of the Nation address. This has already been announced. And there's rumors circulating that he said he will step down, provided, and of course, as Dlamini Zuma is appointed in the interim position, much the same as Kalema Mokgatle was when Mbeki was recalled. I personally don't see this happening because they want to now centralize the power. It is pointless having two spheres of power within the ANC, one from the Thule House, which may have a totally different policy, to one from union buildings. So let's see how that develops. I'd like to remind you the views expressed on the show are not necessarily those of Chai FM.
Join the Corruption Busters for the best in crime-fighting radio.
You're listening to Corruption Busters. I'm Chad Thomas. I'm now joined on the line all the way from Durban by Brad Nathanson, who's a very well-known Durban investigator and, unfortunately for him, has been very involved in the investigation into CM Lee. Brad, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chad.
Brad, horrific story. It's made headlines throughout the country, if not worldwide. The kidnapping of a very young girl, the discovery of her body, and now all the subsequent rumors attached to that. Firstly, how did you get involved in this particular investigation?
Chad, I was originally mandated or contacted by the family in Australia. There's family that reside here in Durban, in South Africa, and there's family, fragmented family that live in Australia, and the family from Australia contacted me.
And Brad, your instructions obviously at that time were to look for her. What was the suspicion? Did you suspect perhaps it was a kidnap for ransom? Did you think it was an opportunistic kidnapping? What were the thoughts that went through your mind, and what developed as a result of that interim investigation?
Chad, I'll be honest, in the beginning this did look like it was kidnapped for ransom and perhaps over an expired and long overdue drug debt, but I'm not so sure that that is the case anymore.
What is your viewpoint now?
Mate, I'll have to keep my viewpoint to myself for the moment whilst this thing is still so sensitive, because it does involve people closer to home, but all I can tell you is that all is not as it seems.
Brad, there's a lot of conjecture, innuendo, and rumor circulating. And then, of course, there were the articles in the weekend newspapers suggesting that the girl was linked to a brothel, that the mother was linked to a brothel, that the mother may have even groomed her. And this is being printed in the newspapers. So, obviously, there's been some form of fact-checking, etc. What is your take? Do you think that it's unnecessary for them to be going this route of exposing her, what she did for a living, what her family or her mother did for a living? Or do you think it's an integral part of the case and it's necessary for the public to know these sordid details?
You know, Chad, I think it's an unnecessary thing for members of the public to have to consider. This it doesn't matter what this girl did on the day she was abducted, a day before, a week before, a month before. The point is, she's a young girl. She's 20 years old. The same dreams and aspirations as any other 20-year-old girl. It's unacceptable that people can be saying and we even had people, a policeman, going onto Facebook and saying, you know what, this girl should, nobody should bother looking for her because A, she doesn't want to be found, and B, look what kind of work she's in. Well, that's just, it's unacceptable. It doesn't matter what she was doing for a living. She was only a little girl, and she was only 20 years old.
It's actually heartbreaking, and it's going to bring up the whole debate again, once again, whether prostitution should be decriminalized, whether it is a victimless crime, provided human trafficking is involved or not. But in this particular instance, this had a particularly horrific ending. Now, for our listeners that haven't followed the story, could you fill them in as to the time she was kidnapped until when she was found, what transpired, what they've been able to piece together happened to this poor girl?
Siang went missing on the 4th of January, on Thursday the 4th of January, and her body was subsequently discovered by farmers on the 6th of January, all the way in New Hanover. I do not believe, I'm not a pathologist, but we'll wait for the pathology report to come out, but I do not believe that Siam was burned to death. I believe that the burning was merely an attempt to disguise everything else that had taken place, and that there was hopes that the body would be burned beyond recognition and therefore not connected back to the case of the missing child here in Durban.
It's really a tragic story, and the reports that are coming out of what her last few hours were all about is really sad. It's horrific, and you quite rightly said we need to look at it as a case of somebody's daughter, somebody's child, somebody that we could know that was abducted, that was most probably tortured, ended up being murdered, her body's been mutilated, and it's something that we cannot stand for. In South Africa, we have a month where crimes against women and children take precedence. The fact remains is it should take precedence on a daily basis. South Africa has horrific statistics. You look at the amount of rapes, you look at the amount of domestic violence, you look at the amount of child abuse. We really need to, as men, we need to stand up for women. And when that hashtag came out last year, all men are trash, I actually looked at it and I said, you know what? They're not very wrong when it comes to this, because there's always an excuse. Why was she wearing a miniskirt? What was she doing out at 3 a.m. in the morning? Why did she have a drink at a club? Well, anybody is entitled to do anything, and there's no excuse for the rape, the abuse, the assault, and the murder of women in South Africa.
Chad, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that too much emphasis has been put on what Siam did for a living, and like I said before, it makes absolutely no difference what she did for a living. The point is that the life of a 20-year-old girl was snuffed out right before she even became an adult. She would have been an adult in March. She would have turned 21 in March. It's unacceptable that the social media has done us no favors with this investigation, because everybody's on the bandwagon about what she did for a living and what her mother did for a living and what could have happened, instead of telling us what did happen.
Brad, it's an absolutely heartbreaking story, and when there's more breaks in the case and when suspects have been identified, I hope you'll join us again on air so you can keep our listeners updated as to this horrific crime.
I would like that very much. Thank you, Chad.
Brad, thank you so much for joining us. That was Brad Natherson. He is a very well-known Durban investigator, and he was involved in the Siam Lee case. He was employed by the family in Australia to find her when she went missing. The sad thing is that she was found, but she was found murdered. We'll be back straight after this.
Join the Corruption Busters for the best in crime-fighting radio.
You're listening to Corruption Busters. If you reside in Johannesburg or if you follow social media, one of the big stories this weekend was the exposure of the Global Election Fraud, otherwise known as Election, Global Election Alternative, as well as a couple of other names. And this fraud has taken hundreds of millions of rands from South Africans, a few people in Dubai, a few people in Hong Kong, a few people in the UK, but primarily South Africans have suffered as a result of what we term a boiler room scam. Joining me in studio today is one of the complainants in this case, Roelof Weideman, and we're going to be chatting to Roelof because Roelof is going to give us insight from a complainant's perspective how it is that he became an investor in this particular scheme. Roelof, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Chad.
Roelof, I appreciate you coming in. It's not easy for you, I know, and it's not easy for a lot of the complainants and victims to come forward because people tend to feel very bad when they realize that they've been a victim of a fraud. It's not easy communicating this to family and friends. When did you realize that perhaps this was a scam?
Yeah, it's a very, very, very long road. I'm actually Roelof Weideman of Annedieu Westrand. And a normal guy, a pensioner, and I was having a little bit of amount available from a pension fund that I've tried for years to get, and I was getting this amount out, and I thought, yeah, good, I would like to preserve this amount and not to give it out, not to put it in a normal bank account, but try to do something about it. And truly, I went on the web. What do you call it? The webmail, so wet, they picked me up. There's scanners on people working with Global Electro, and I call them scanners. So they scanned me and they contacted me directly. They could say cold marketing, direct marketing, and they were sitting on me day and night. A specific Melissa Denrai, I can't call names, but
no,
she
can.
Was sitting on me day and night and night and day, and my wife said to me, this person is phoning you night and day. I said, I don't have a girlfriend, I don't have a Melissa. She said, no, it's a global thing. I said, okay. And she kept on to me for about a week or two or three, and then I've made an appointment to come and see her in her offices at Melrose, and she said to me, I went there, shiny chairs and a beautiful area and posh buildings, and I thought, goodness, this is a place to be. And they put me in the lecture room for 3-4 hours, explaining in detail that you can't lose. I mean, their way of talking, you could realize their way of talking, is that they said, Mr. Weideman, this investment is a story. It's a high security bonded storage, physical delivery optional, fully insured, fully regulated, 100% physical ownership, a trading platform, low commission, and no annual management, and it's about 20% to 23.4% per annum. And I thought, well, there we go, and I sign up.
If you look at the way they presented themselves, the way they phoned you, it's high-pressure sales. But for you to go in, especially to an office in Melrose Arch is the new Sandton. It's extremely upmarket. It gave credibility to what you believed was a legitimate investment. Once you invested, what happened then?
Yeah, then you mean when I paid in the money?
Once you decided, you know what, this looks legitimate, I'm actually going to invest my money.
Yeah. then they kept on going and said, okay, you must have a specific date to conclude the investment to pay it in. They made a specific date, and then they promised that they will give you some fully, how do you call it, fully contract material, but they will only do that in 6 months, and I thought, fine, but in my head I was feeling not 100% sure. I was feeling unsafe in a way from the very beginning, because at one stage Langeveld said to me, she can't go on with this business. And I thought, why? And I asked her why, and she said to me, that was after I signed. And she said to me, now she's just tired. She wants to go on a big leave, vacation. And it was bothering me, but so the next few months, I was keeping a low profile. I thought, okay, fine, I'll just keep a low profile and wait for the contract and the finalization of everything they said they will do. And I tried to follow it on the platform, that credit, what do you call it, the valuation, the platform, and everything went nicely. It will go up absorbently, the cash flow, and I from 2,000-3,000 rand a month, and I thought, goodness gracious, go on like that, I get 50% or 30 or more, and it just goes on, and then all of a sudden I feel now it's not sounding right. And I was phoning the offices and there was no answers. There was just a voicemail. And then it came the cessation notice all of a sudden in the middle of... I started the investment in 2016, I must say, November. And it was a 12-month fixed period. And I wonder why they say fixed, fixed, fixed. Because they say there's no turn back. If you put it in, you put it in. No chance to recover, no chance to do anything about it. So after 6-7 months, I get a cessation notice on my wife's phone because I don't have a cell phone. And I said to her, oh, I don't want to hear about it, just let it be. And when I find out on my phone just before November when I was supposed to get the money out, there's nothing there. Red alert, all the way to the bank. And I went to Hello Peter, and they say, this place is not existing.
For those listeners that are tuning in, or those that aren't aware of the Electio fraud, that didn't see the articles in this weekend Sunday papers, the Electio fraud revolves around a very complicated, complex fraud known as technology metals. And the pitch was that you could invest in technology metals that were kept in safe storage, and that these technology metals are what are used in everyday cell phones, computers, etc. It was an extremely slick pitch that was given, and it was high pressure sales. These guys would cold call, they would get lists of individuals. We've been told by one of the whistleblowers they would get a list of buyers of high value wines, wine collectors. Somebody who was involved with a vineyard would sell a list, and these people would then target those particular people, or they would target pensioners. There's a case where a girl was targeted who had received a payout from the Road Accident Fund. She had been very severely injured, and this was her lifeboat, and she invested in this based on the pitch. They continued to pitch her for 6 months until she finally caved. There's a retired gentleman from the military who invested his entire pension, and of course we have Rulof in studio, who himself invested one of his pension funds payouts in this particular scheme. We're going to be talking more about Electio. We're going to take an ad break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what's happened subsequent to some of the directors disappearing, and where are some of the local South Africans that were involved in the scam today.
Join the Corruption Busters for the best in crime fighting radio.
You're listening to Corruption Busters live in Johannesburg on 101.9 FM, streaming worldwide on chaifm.com and available as a download to your cell phone. If you want to take part in the conversation, if you know something about Electio, or you just want to talk about boiler room frauds in general, feel free to SMS us 34519, that number again, 34519, or you can tweet us at chaifm. In studio with me today is Rulof Weideman. He is one of the complainants represented by IRS Forensic Investigations in this investigation into Electio. And this investigation is now at an extremely advanced stage. To give our listeners an update on what's been happening with the Electio case, MoneyWeb published two stories in the last few months relating to their study on technology metals and the returns that were offered by this particular company. Unfortunately, they never called out the company as being what it's now turned out to be, a fraudulent enterprise. But they did put in sufficient warnings at that stage to say, listen, if it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true. Unfortunately, those two articles and that investigation by MoneyWeb came too little, too late for the complainants, who had subsequently lost millions upon millions of rands. I myself have interviewed four whistleblowers, four junior staff members that worked at this organization. One, in fact, worked for them in Dubai before they moved the operation to South Africa. And he worked for them while they were moving premises in Melrose Arch, because they actually had two offices in Melrose Arch. And when it got hot in the one, they moved across to the other. That's when this chappy realized something wasn't right, and he came to chat to us. Three more whistleblowers subsequently came to us, and we started hearing horrific stories. We heard how some of these foreign directors would hire very expensive apartments in Melrose Arch, how they would entertain prostitutes, how they would have drug-induced parties, buying the most expensive liquor, going to the most expensive clubs, hiring the most expensive cars. So it's tragic to think that this was a boiler room scam and that it was just a move to take people's money. However, that being said, I mentioned earlier just how slick and sophisticated it was. You could access your bundle. It was called a bundle or a basket online. You could see how the prices were increasing, or the value of the technology metals were increasing. The officers were slick. The salesmen were slick. And the actual product does exist in reality. There is such a thing as technology metals. If you think about cobalt, which is mined in the east of the DRC, that product is used in every single x-ray machine or nuclear medicine machine. If you think of tantalite, it's a product that helps keep your cell phone cool. And these products are worth an immense amount of money, which is why there's a civil war in the east of Congo. You have people fighting for the rights to mine these different products. However, these guys did not have those products. I contacted the supposed bonded stores in Dubai. They obviously had no knowledge of this. We contacted the bank in the Caribbean. They refused to get back to us. We contacted the local auditors. They refused. And then all the red flags were raised, and we knew for a fact we were dealing with a scam. At this point in time, when we started asking the questions that made everybody uncomfortable, they approached a law firm called Pandor & Associates, and Mr. Pandor himself contacted us and tried to get us to cease and desist. We did not cease and desist. They then realized that there was going to be a criminal case, so they went to one of South Africa's foremost criminal attorneys, Piet du Plessis from BDK, and that firm has represented everybody, including the likes of Radovan Krecher. And that in itself suggests to you that when you go to a criminal lawyer, somebody who specializes primarily in racketeering, money laundering, proceeds of crime, organized crime, then you must know that your suspects have in fact committed a crime. Now, for you, Rulof, sitting here and hearing this, seeing the reports over the last few months, seeing the newspaper reports, when did it finally sink into you that this was, in fact, a fraud?
The moment just before they were supposed to pay out the monies in the end of 2017, of the 12-month period, I was phoning immediately the offices, and they just say, refer me to some other, I don't know what they call it again, but they referred me to some overhead body and say you must ask them. Investments.
Okay.
I must phone GE Investments, and they've got then a tape talking to you and say there's now something wrong, and they will come back to you. And but Chad was talking, I just want to say something. Chad was talking about the slick operations and slick here and slick there. And I thought slick is a good word, but then I thought there must be something else. The operation was slick, but the people, I thought, I'm Afrikaans speaking, but I thought there was a word, they call it suave.
Okay.
And suave, and I thought I must look it up in the dictionary, suave. It's S-U-A-V-E, suave. And that was fantastic for me, because that mean suave was meaning especially, describing it especially of a man, confident, elegant, and polite, sometimes in a way that does not necessarily mean sincere. And I thought that's fantastic to describe people like that.
It actually describes him to a T. As I said, we're very fortunate in that we've had four whistleblowers come forward. It's very unusual in a fraud of this magnitude to have whistleblowers come forward. What was bizarre, though, is that in the Sunday newspapers, the journalist, Shane Germana, who wrote the article, and it was a very thorough article, he spoke to all the parties concerned. He even spoke to victims and complainants in the matter. When he spoke to Piet du Plessis from BDK attorneys, Piet du Plessis said, no, but hold on a second. Three of the people that I represent have actually made a disclosure, so they're whistleblowers, so they shouldn't be prosecuted. And the cartoon that was run in the Saturday Star was actually these three people holding money bags and saying, no, we've spoken the truth, you should leave us alone. And that's what's so bizarre. Their defense is going to be that they, as part of the syndicate of people, actually came forward, but that is incorrect. They do not make a part of the four whistleblowers who actually did come to us from the outset. Those three who are claiming whistleblower status, we tried to get hold of countless times. We sent countless messages, first to Pandor, then to Duplessis, asking to interview them, to give them the Audi Ultram Partum rule, which is the right of reply, and they refused. Now, suddenly, that the proverbial has hit the fan, they are now wanting to go to come forward and to so-called whistleblow. This is absolute nonsense. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the local bank's involvement in this fraud and what kind of recourse there is for the clients. We're going to be listening to Lira and Something Inside So Strong.
Join the Corruption Busters for the best in crime-fighting radio.
Wow, what a song. That was Something Inside So Strong by the South Africa's Lira. It's a cover of the 1987 song by Lebby Safri, which has become an international anthem for those that are oppressed. And it could never be more applicable if one sees what's going on in the world today. In studio with me today is Roelof Weideman. He is a complainant in the Electio scam, and the Electio scam has now reached a point where it's in the public domain. It's been investigated by a high-level task team from the Hawks, and they are, I must say, taking this case extremely seriously, which is great to know, because people always have negative things to say about the South African police services, about the Hawks, about the National Prosecuting Authority, etc. But I can tell you this: if they have the correct members investigating a case and they have the correct facts at hand, I have seen it for myself, the amount of arrests that have been made in various high profile fraud cases and in even not so high profile. It's just that we as a public seem to be distracted by the politics of the day. And what really upsets me is when I'll post something, for example, on social media about Electio and how the victims have lost so much money, etc., some smart ass will go right underneath that, well, why are you concentrating on them? What about Zuma? Or somebody will say, go after the Guptas. Why are you not going after them? Leave these guys. And to me, that's bizarre. How do you justify people taking other people's hard-earned money and then say, well, if the government can do it, so can we? One thing people need to realize is fraud and corruption is inherent worldwide. It is not uniquely South African. In fact, it is a massive problem worldwide, and we all need to stand together and fight. And that is why this is such an important case. Roelof, there was a local bank involved, because everybody had to pay monies into a local bank account. It was actually a branch of that bank that was in Melrose. Now, what I found bizarre, and we've made a complaint as a result of this, is that bank would allow for monies that were paid in by the complainants into the Electio account to be almost immediately transferred out to the Bank of Baroda, which is in the Caribbean. Have you had any communication with the bank? Have you asked them any questions regarding the movement of monies?
Yeah, I went the first few days. I was so shocked and disgusted and not believing and not trusting anyone. But then I thought, I'll contact the bank through emailing. And I came to a Botswana or a woman called, I don't want to sound now, but her name was, I think, Botswana, and she said to me, she's head of client services, and she knows about it, and it's a fraudulent scheme, and she knows it's a fraudulent account, but they've closed their account, and the money is not there anymore, and she can't do no more. And that was the end.
Now, you see, this gets me upset, because we have two things. One is the law, and the other is in terms of governance and in terms of Basel when it comes to banks. The first, which is the law, is FICA. The Financial Intelligence Center Act was established specifically to stop money laundering. And this, where you've got money coming into a local account and virtually immediately being transferred out to a foreign account, to me constitutes money laundering. There should have been multiple red flags. It should have been reported to the Financial Intelligence Center. Secondly, the banks themselves have a policy called KYC, which is know your client. They should have known their clients. They should have done backgrounds on their clients. And if there were red flags, they should have investigated the bona fides of these clients.
Absolutely.
Now, what I find bizarre as well is, if you look at the identities of two of the foreign directors that we're currently investigating, they actually changed their names. They had English names, they were from the UK, and they took on Arabic names, and they were then given Arabic Olympic passports from the UAE. One is to ask oneself the question, did they change their name because they were wanted on previous charges? What happened when they were operating in England? What happened when they were operating in Dubai? Why did they move their operation to South Africa? And if you see the amount of money is moving through an account, a bank has a duty to everybody, not just to their client, but to everybody in terms of governance and in terms of Basel, to ensure that that account is operating legally. And I cannot for the life of me see how an account that is being used as a clearing account, that the funds are virtually automatically transferred overseas, did not raise the suspicions of somebody within the bank. Are you upset with the response you got from the bank?
Absolutely. I thought it's a, they can't do that. They just can't do that. They can't just take no responsibility of in people that invest. You can't say not invest. A bank account that I could see, it's opening up because of the boiler room system that it's going from one, you could say they started out with Global Electro and then Electro Alternative, and then they go on and on and on, and they close and they take the money out and they change it over and they make another new account and they go on. Don't tell me that they don't know about there's something wrong. There must be something wrong. And then they must go to some overhead people. I don't know if you know the people, specialists that could say what is really going on with this fraudulent schemes, and they must have known there's something wrong. It must be fraudulent.
Well, let me tell you this, and this is why it upsets me, because IRS Forensic Investigations is a reactive firm. It comes in once the fraud has been perpetrated, once people realize that a fraud has taken place. But we have checks and balances in place as a country with laws to prevent this from happening. There's the Financial Services Board. There's the South African Reserve Bank Enforcement and Surveillance Division. There's the Financial Intelligence Center. And of course, there's the South African Revenue Services. Now, SARS follows newspaper articles. They actually have guys within SARS that read magazines and newspapers daily. So if somebody's showing off at a wedding with a Bentley, or if somebody's showing off about a new house that they've bought, etc., they do random sample audits on these individuals. Now, when the articles were broken by MoneyWeb, one would think that somebody at the Reserve Bank or somebody at the Financial Intelligence Center or somebody at the Financial Services Board would be reading these articles. One would hope that these statutory bodies would have a department that scan the newspapers, listen to the news, and look for red flags so that they can institute an investigation. And it seems that this did not happen. It seems like the system let down the investors in the scheme, because we know for a fact that nobody had an FSP number and nobody was registered with the FSP. We know that money's moved into an account and were cleared and sent to another account. We know that the returns offered seemed unrealistic once these people started trying to upsell, because this was their modus operandi. So Rulof, what would your statement be to your fellow complainants and your fellow victims and other people who are listening to this? Because I know the old adage has been said so many times, if it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true. But that's very simplistic. What is your advice to people not to become ensnared in something like this? What should they look for?
They must definitely, before they do anything else, they must go to something. I only heard about, because I'm not a computer, I'm not very good glued up with all the new things in the market, but I only heard afterwards about Hello Peter. And before they go doing anything like that, and because they, to start with, you know, when they offer you 20%, 23% per annum, they can't be possible, because the maximum of some other institutions is like, it's like 10% or maximum 11%. So 20, it's too good to be true. And then they must go to Hello Peter, or go to any attorney, or go to any BDO or companies that's really worth, that's creditable, and ask them, just check it up for me, and that answer will be coming up within 10 minutes. Not to try it out. It's just, you must just not do it, and then stay with the companies that you know is there all the way. I don't want to say names now, but stand with the companies that's reputable.
100%. We're going to take our last ad break of the day. When we come back, we're going to have final remarks from Rulof and contact details should you have any information regarding Electure.
Join the Corruption Busters for the best in crime-fighting radio.
You're listening to Corruption Busters. I'm Chad Thomas, and I've been in conversation with Rula Weidemann, who is one of the complainants in the Electio fraud investigation. The case is at an advanced stage in that the suspects have been identified. Two of the suspects are on the run. They're two foreign suspects. One of the third suspects, who is also foreign, has been located. He is in South Africa together with the remainder of the suspects. In total, the suspect pool is around about 10 suspects, and the value of the fraud is estimated to be around the 500 million rand mark. And that, I must emphasize, is a conservative amount. Assets are in the process of being identified, and Interpol will be involved, especially in terms of the foreign suspect, who we do have eyes on. He is in Europe. And of course, the asset forfeiture in South Africa will become involved in terms of applying for a preservation order for the assets that have been identified. If anybody has information relating to Electio or any of the other suspects, they can refer to the article in this week's Saturday Star. They can chat to the journalist Shane Germana. They can also contact IRS Forensic Investigations by going to the IRS site, which is irsa.co.za. In closing, Rulof, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us today. I know it's not easy. I did send out a request to other victims to come forward, and it's very emotional for a lot of people. To Bianca, whose name was in the newspaper because she very bravely allowed her name to be used, I thank her. Bianca is the young victim who was involved in the horrific car accident and invested her entire road accident fund payout in this particular scheme. And we thank her for her bravery for letting her story be told. People don't realize just how bad fraud is. And Rulof, I'd like to thank you for telling us your story today. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing?
Thank you very much. I think we people went through a lot of turmoil and trauma, and there's a lot of moods, as I said before, disgusting, not believing in oneself anymore, shame and loss and anxiety and sadness and grief. But the urge to retaliate and to fight back, at least to prevent other people like us to fall prey of this unfortunate circumstances, to stop fraud and corruption, and to prevent high-minded executives with flighted words to deceive you. Thank you very much.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And I want to remind our listeners that we call con artists for a reason. They are confident and they are convincing, and it is their mission in life to separate you from your life savings or your pension fund. They are sociopaths. They have no feelings whatsoever. You've been listening to Corruption Busters. The podcast will be uploaded. You can find it on chaifm.com if you'd like one of your friends or neighbors or family members to listen to this. And if you have any questions or comments, you're more than welcome to contact us via the chaifm website, which is chaifm.com. As usual, I'd like to thank you for participating in the show. Next week, we will have the members from Corruption Watch on the show. And the following week, we have a very exciting guest that's coming on air with us. And I'm going to keep that a surprise for you, but it's somebody that is South African. Foremost crime fighters, and somebody that created one of South Africa's foremost units within the NPA. So next week, Corruption Watch, and the following week, our surprise guest. You've been listening to Corruption Busters. I'm Chad Thomas. Mondays, 12 to 1 o'clock, right here, 101.9 Chai FM.